Blessing and Jonga, good evening Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, March 21st, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Studio 7 is going out to you on 909 medium wave and on 4930-45940 and 154-55 shorter frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com. Text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Rights organizations launch a report on the human rights situation in Zimbabwe, saying the country has a lot to do in complying with United Nations recommendations.
We have got a new constitution now in place, which is very expansive, the Bill of Rights. Of course, there's progress, you know, the government has actually made strides in terms of combating.
Junior parliamentarians meet for the first time this year and urge the government to address issues affecting children.
Our aim of this campaign is to bridge the gap and tensions between diverse groups in Zimbabwe to establish a movement which prevents violence.
And an initiative to combat domestic violence and encourage political tolerance is launched in Bulawayo.
Rights organizations today launched a report on the human rights situation in the country ahead of a national human rights report to be presented by the government at the United Nations Human Rights Commission later this year. The Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, Zimbabwe Human Rights NGO Forum, and other civil society groups launched the report at the Mikus Hotel in Harare. The report is dubbed a shadow report on the status of compliance with recommendations accepted by the government of Zimbabwe at the UN Human Rights Commission. During the Universal Periodic Review, known as UPR, process at the UN Human Rights Council in 2011, the then Minister of Justice, Patrick Chinamasa, stated that Zimbabwe was taking steps to address allegations of human rights abuses leveled against the government. These recommendations included, among others, investigations into the 2008 election atrocities, transparency in the diamond mining sector, and greater cooperation with civil society. Efforts to get a comment from Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa or his deputy Fortune Chasi were futile as they were not picking up their mobile phones. But Studio 7's Blessing Zulu reached Zimbabwe Human Rights NGO Forum Director Abel Chikomo, who says the government has a lot to do.
Basically, what the NGOs were doing today was launching our Universal Periodic Review midterm report. You know, in compliance with the provisions and requirements of the United Nations, we are required to submit, prior to the government submitting its own report on the progress so far since, you know, the review of Zimbabwe on 10 October 2011. In other words, what the government has done in terms of implementing the recommendations that itself as a government accepted, you know, from the United Nations. And it's facing any challenges. What are the challenges? You know, how can the UN come in to assist? And what can civil society do as well? So our report that we are launching today was highlighting the progress from our point of view as civil society. And this is based on our own observations, the work that we do on the ground, the consultation that we have done broadly in civil society and within communities, you know, following up on those specific recommendations that the government, accepted, you know, from the United Nations.
Would you say there's been progress?
Yes, I would say there's been progress, yes. You know, look, we have got a new constitution now in place, which is very expansive, the Bill of Rights. Of course, there's progress, you know, the government has actually made strides in terms of combating, you know, the scourge of HIV and AIDS. There's been also progress as far as this question is concerned, as far as economic, social and cultural rights are concerned, in terms of acknowledging that these are rights, of course, that have to be progressively realized. So thus far, you know, I think that is commendable. But of course, there's a huge, you know, deficits. There's a lot that could be done to improve the human rights situation on the ground. And that is what we actually were specifically speaking to. You know, to say, okay, we agreed as a country that, yes, we were going to align our domestic laws, including customary laws, you know, with ratified human rights instruments. We're going to ratify treaties, you know, protect human rights. We agreed that, of course, we're going to strengthen independent commissions and so forth and so on, you know. We even agreed that the rule of law was paramount and we're going to work around that. We also agreed that, you know, freedom of assembly and association, we also thought that it was important to acknowledge national healing and reconciliation as something important. But look, in all these areas, there is a lot of work that still needs to be done. We still see that there's a lot of selective application of the law. We still have not actually criminalized torture in our statute books yet. We still have a lot of gaps as far as the national human rights institutions are concerned. Technically, you know, they are incapacitated. Technically, the Human Rights Commission, for example, is unable to do anything. Obviously, we're calling on the government to work very hard in this area.
That was Human Rights NGO Forum Chairman or Director Abel Chukwuma speaking with Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Meanwhile, an initiative to combat domestic violence and encourage political tolerance was launched today in Bulawayo. Two local groups, Poetry Bulawayo and the Christian Youth Volunteers Association Trust, joined hands with the global movement Beyond Peace in coming up with the Visions for Zimbabwe campaign. The groups will work with Bulawayo poets in spreading domestic and political tolerance, says spokesman Max Banda.
Our aim of this campaign is to bridge the gap and tensions between diverse groups in Zimbabwe to establish a movement which prevents violence by taking steps towards a prosperous and future better for Zimbabwe.
The poets that you are working with, what mechanism are they using to spread the message of peace?
For example, in our launch today, we invited quite a number of stakeholders, different civil society groups. And this approach, we are also relating it to our social network, like Facebook and Twitter, where we encourage people to post their own visions for Zimbabwe. For poetry, it's more like a way of bringing people together while delivering the message using poetry.
And that was Visions for Zimbabwe campaign spokesman Max Banda on the line from Bulawayo.
Junior parliamentarians from Harare Metropolitan Province held their first debate session today for this year, urging parents, government and society to work together in addressing issues affecting children. Ivan Chifera has details from the capital.
The lively debate centered on issues of child marriages, child labor, deprivation of education, and disparities and problems children face in obtaining birth certificates at the Registrar General's offices. The junior parliamentarian said children without birth certificates are failing to enroll in public schools, adding the government must make it mandatory for all children to obtain these documents at birth. One such junior parliamentarian is Anton Mbala, who explains birth certificates should be issued in hospitals and not the Registrar General's offices.
When the child is born, one only cannot fill out birth certificate. Don't know why, but then they do this. I feel that the solution would be that in all hospitals or areas in which there is childbirth taking place, we must have registrars there, not allowing the children to leave without birth certificates. That it should be mandatory that when the child is born, the birth certificate is now available. Because when you leave the parents go, then you allow them to take time. And then this process then builds up because there are children who are born now and children who are born 10 years ago all wanting birth certificates at the same time, therefore creating a backflow in the system.
The junior parliamentarians also complained the process to obtain birth certificates at the Registrar General's offices is slow and corrupt. The issue of child labor also came under spotlight, with Lindani Moyo of Highfield East saying junior parliamentarians must take the lead in the fight against forced children labor. Vincent Bagasa of Mbare and Julian Masawi of Seke South both condemned child labor and expressed worry over the failure by government to stamp out what they described as an evil practice. Masawi said it is worrying that even police officers are not arresting the culprits. The parliamentarians also urged the government to look after children with disabilities, saying some of them were out of school as most institutions have no facilities that cater for them. Junior Minister responsible for Information and Communication Technologies, Kudakwashe Kuzindiwana, said children with disabilities must be allowed to register in schools of their choice.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think we should have an integral society where we have those living with a disability coexisting with those who do not have a disability, not having a mutual exclusive existence whereby we segregate them. To do this, we have to start by integrating them in schools.
After the debate, Portfolio Committee Chairman of the National Assembly and representatives from government ministries responded to the issues raised by the junior parliamentarians. Minister of State for Harare Province, Miriam Chikukwa, said the government will do all it can to ensure children, the leaders of tomorrow, have a bright future. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The Harare City Council has started sending out retrenchment letters to some of its workers as it tries to downsize its operations and improve service delivery. Mayor Bennett Manyenyeni says his council has decided to, quote, right-size its manpower levels so the former Sunshine City can focus its limited resources on improving service delivery. But not everyone is happy about the move. Some affected workers told Studio 7 that the letters they have received do not indicate how much the city will pay them on being retrenched. The city intends to retrench over 1,000 workers, among them anyone nearing 60 years of age and above. Sources say Chitungwiza Town Council also intends to retrench over 900 workers and is waiting for government permission to proceed. Reporter Jonga Kandemiri speaks with Harare Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni on the retrenchment.
The council decided to right-size its manpower levels across the board using a number of strategies. This is work in progress, which we are initiating. We are not at the stage where we can say this is the cut and dried. This downsizing exercise has commenced, I will admit. We are managing the processes as we go along.
How many workers do you expect to retrench at the end of the day?
Like I've said, this is work in progress. There are areas where we've identified by various methods to initiate the processes. The other methods we are going to be using for the second or third or whatever phases we go through, the employment levels that we think the city can afford. You'll appreciate that we've struggled to pay our salaries on time. You'll appreciate that we've not been able to meet all the service expectations simply because of our financial constraints. So this downsizing exercise is one of many strategies that we're going to be employing going forward to see how best the city can maximize its income and also contain its costs. At the moment, you will appreciate the human resource cost has been one of our biggest costs. It has actually been the biggest. So any attempt to manage the financial performance of the council of necessity must compense with the right sizing our employment costs.
The council is currently struggling to pay its workers on time. Do you think it will find money to pay those retrenched workers?
Again, we're only at the very early stage of the process. We think we'll be able to do what is necessary and be innovative about it if necessary. But with the process that has commenced, it's a process that will not stop. It's a process that the city requires for it to function better. So the downsizing or the right sizing is unavoidable. How we manage the other aspects are the things that we're looking at now.
That was Harare City Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni in Harare. But Zimbabwe Urban Council's Workers Union Secretary General Moses Matlangu says the move by the Harare City Council is illegal.
If that is the case, those retrenchments are a nullity because there is no work council that has deliberated on it. One. Two, there is no application to the retrenchment board. So a retrenchment cannot be unilateral. It has got to be discussed within parties. My advice is all those people who got those letters, can they come to the union offices? In this case now, they are coming straight to head office. They let them come straight to head office with their letters, and then we start the ball rolling. We engage our legal practitioners and the Minister of Labour at the same time.
Can a worker challenge his or her retrenchment?
Very much so. This is in fact illegal. The whole thing is illegal. Because when they started, the mayor was saying we are going to discuss this at Works Council, and then I'm not aware that those avenues have been shaken. Employers should learn to do things the right way. The soft spot, whenever there is financial problems, the soft spot becomes the worker. Nobody talks about the management getting so much workers going for 7 months without pay, like in the case of Chitumbi. So the lowest paid worker becomes the target when he actually gets nothing compared to the executive.
That was Zimbabwe Urban Council's Workers Union Secretary General Moses Matlangu in Bulawayo.
Meanwhile, the Bulawayo City Council says it is owed over $30 million by residents despite its debt relief efforts initiated by the government last year. Finance Minister Chairperson James Sithole on the committee says, on the other hand, the local government ministry has slashed the city's 2014 budget from $123 million to $113 million, leaving the local authority in a tight financial position. This, he says, will affect service delivery drastically. The council says it is also owed over $35 million by industry and commerce, adding it may never recover the money since companies have since closed. The Bulawayo City Council owes various creditors, including its employees, over $70 million in salaries and pensions.
More than 70% of loans are disbursed under the Youth Development Fund have not been repaid in the past 4 years, raising concern that the government has been prejudiced of millions of dollars. Central African Building Society KEBS Managing Director Kevin Terry told the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Youth Indigenization and Economic Empowerment yesterday that so far the society had approved 3,622 applications worth $5.2 million and had disbursed $4.5 million. The chairperson of the committee, Justice Mayor Wadjajena, asked Terry to provide more information next week when the committee meets again. The Infrastructure Development Bank of Zimbabwe, IDBZ, Chief Executive Charles Chikaura also raised concern over non-performing youth loans. He said if all efforts to recover the loans fail, the banks will have to seek legal recourse, but added that they will stand guided on that matter by the government. The Youth Development Fund was launched by the government in 2006 as a revolving fund managed by IDBZ. The average loan size for the projects was $1,438 and a maximum of $5,000. Independent commentator Tavani Nyoni, who is also chairman of Bulawayo Agenda, told Studio 7 that the failure of repaying the loans was more of a culture of refusal to pay than non-viability of the projects.
You can even use the example that most universities right now are charging students for tertiary education. Yet 10 or so years ago, students were given what was called vocational training loans so that they can study and pay back. But no concrete step arrangements were made to make sure that there is a proper economy and that these students are able to pay back the money so that it continues to support tertiary education for other students that will come after them. And this is the same with the youth fund. But what makes the youth fund worse is that this was a politicized distribution of loans, where most people that were given loans were supposed to be connected, aligned, or committed to supporting certain political interests rather than demonstrating the capacity to be able to use the resources effectively and then generate money to be able to pay back. We will appreciate also that no collateral was being requested and no collateral continues to be requested.
But Mr. Nyoni, we understand that the loans were dispersed based on the practicability of business plans which were approved.
First of all, the very fact that the money has not been brought back, as like you are saying, 70% of the people have not sent back, is actually a sign that no concrete, proper risk assessment was made when these people were being given resources. One wonders what basis was done to really give them the money, because you cannot have a situation where 70% of recipients are unable to pay back. It means that either those business plans were not viable or those people did not even intend to use that money for that purpose.
Tavani Nyoni is an independent commentator who is also chairman of Bulawayo Agenda.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 medium wave and on the 4930-5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
The state of the National Voters' Roll is under spotlight again, with a senior member of the MDCT complaining the document still has serious anomalies ahead of a council by-election in Mkoba next month. Tawarai Shawa has more from Gweru.
Speaking at a press conference in Gweru today, House of Assembly member from Mkoba, Amos Chibaya, said although his party is happy that it was given the voters' roll in advance of the Ward 12 by-election, the voters' roll still has many irregularities which he said need to be addressed urgently. Chibaya, a member of the MDCT's national executive, said on inspection they found many people who died years ago were still on the voting list.
The following list gives the examples of what we have cited from the voters' roll to be used in the by-election on the 12th of April 2014. One, diseased people. We discovered Banda Landin of house number 2433, Mukoba 7, who died in 1988. The second one, Mbano, it's M-B-A-N-O, Mbano Ruth, of house number 2647, Mukoba 7, who died in 1997.
Chibaya said other irregularities are the inclusion of people who live outside Ward 12 and the Mkoba constituency, as well as duplication of voters.
There's also a duplication. We've got Ellen Nyara Zunduna, Mkoba Just College. The same person, same ID number, different addresses. She appears male, female at the same time, but the same person because the ID is the same. Then there are some who have been registered twice. We've got Mazoreze Jacqueline of house number 1751 Mkoba 6. I'm giving you addresses so that at least if you want to go and check yourself, you can see it yourself. We've just picked a few, but we've got a list of these anomalies.
He said he would approach the local Zimbabwe Election Commission offices soon after his party's candidate for the election, Fortunate Chiokoyo, was allegedly told by a ZEC district officer that there was nothing wrong with the voters' roll. Chibaya said his party will also seek a high court order to bar ZEC from accepting voter slips during the by-election, arguing that the documents were no longer necessary after their use during last year's national election. Provincial elections officer Dorcas Mpofu could not be reached for comment as her mobile phone was not reachable. The Ward 12 council seat fell vacant following the death earlier this year of Councillor Elvis Mavondo, who was a member of the MDCT. ZANU-PF and the National Constitutional Assembly have also picked candidates for the by-election to be held on April 12. Elsewhere, Gweru City Council workers today threatened to strike over unpaid February wages. Speaking during a report-back meeting, Zimbabwe Urban Council's Workers Union Local Secretary Kudakwashi Mnengiwa said council had promised to pay the outstanding wages on the 28th of this month. But workers are angry, charging the local authorities taking them for granted. Nengu accused the council's finance committee of reneging on the agreed dates of wage payments and undermining the workers' union. Contacted for comment, finance committee chairperson Albert Chirau could not be drawn into saying much except that the workers would get their wages. Reporting for Studio 7 from Gweru, this is Taurai Shawa.
Thanks, Taurai Shawa. Two local organizations have donated an assortment of goods for Cholocho flood victims who were left homeless following heavy rains in Matabeleland North Province. The rains had destroyed houses, crops and food reserves. According to Cholocho North Member of Parliament Roslyn Sipepankomo, donations by the Cholocho Development Trust and Friends of Cholocho based in Harare will go a long way in helping people in the flood-ravaged areas. Nkomo says she's disappointed that ministers who visited the area a week ago have not fulfilled their promises of delivering tons of maize and other grains for the victims.
Actually, it's clothing, mainly clothing, shoes, and so forth for all ages, children, teenagers, also women and men. I received those items today, this morning, and they were very grateful what they did to remember that they are people, relatives, friends in Cholocho who are in need of assistance. At the same time, I also urge all friends, relatives, everybody, churches, companies to donate to Cholocho so that they can also have something like, food. Mainly food, that's what where we have a problem. We got something from friends from Harare.
And what happened to the promises that were made by ministers who visited the area. They promised to bring some tons and tons of food. What happened to that?
It's really interesting. People are still waiting to receive those promised items. They're not yet there. If they did, I don't know where they channeled them to. We have not received anything from the government. You see, that's the government's responsibility to bring all those things.
That was Cholocho North Member of Parliament Rosalind Sipepangomo speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
A legendary music icon Oliver Mtukudzi takes the stage tonight alongside Dendera Kings artist Sulumani Chimbetu at the Royal Regency in London before heading to Leicester for another show tomorrow. Tukufan Tarusimbi says he is excited about the show, having missed out on another one last year. He says he is looking forward to the live show of the duet Kwedu that was released by the two artists, detailing their personal experiences in their rural home areas of Dande and Makwiro. Simbi spoke with Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanganyahue.
I'm ecstatic. I'm very excited that the music icon, our superstar Oliver Mtukudzi, will be playing here tonight. He plays in Leicester tomorrow as well. And at the same time, he's sharing the stage with this young upcoming musician, Sulumani, who I think he's lucky to be sharing the stage with Tuku. Tuku is somebody I see who wants the young generation to do well in music. So it's a fantastic opportunity for Sulumani and at the same time for us fans to see both doing what they know best.
What do you think is the importance of having such artists visiting the diaspora in other countries where Zimbabweans are living?
Wherever somebody lives in the world, home is always best. And having musicians coming from home to entertain us, it really does remind us of home. It does take away that thirst. It quenches that thirst that we have for home music. And it also gets us to come together. So I think it's very, very important in terms of reconciliation and not forgetting where we came from.
Which are some of Oliver Mtukudzi's songs are you going to be looking forward to him playing tonight and tomorrow? And Sulu songs too, which ones touch your heart?
Sulu has done a duet with Oliver Mtukudzi. It's a very good song. I look forward to that, definitely. And then Oliver has got many albums behind him, more than 60, 61, 62. But usually there are some old songs that always get the shows going, like Raki, Mutserendende. You know, those are sort of songs that I'm looking forward to him playing. And on his recent album, there's one that he dedicated to the wedding of his daughter, the one that says, Chakutengana Mapata Pata, something like that. It's a very good song. That's why I look forward to all that, yes.
That was Tukufan Tarusimbi speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanganyahue from London.
In sports news, the newly elected chairperson of Zimbabwe Women's Football, Miriam Sibanda, says she will meet with the ZIFA chief executive, Jonathan Mashingaidze, tomorrow to discuss her mandate following her election Saturday to the coveted post. Sibanda, a former journalist and Zimbabwe media commissioner, beat former chairperson Mavis Gumbo, who has been at the helm of women's soccer since 2010. Sibanda says there's a lot that needs to be done to revive women's football in the country, adding she's ready for the task. She spoke with Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanganyahue.
Well, my responsibility stretches from the provinces, regions, up to the National Super League. In so far as women's football is concerned, women will play from provinces in the geographical provinces, and then those provinces are grouped into regions. We have four regions, northern, southern, eastern, and central. And we also have a national super league comprising 16 teams. So essentially, my main responsibility is to make sure football is being played at all those levels, from the district, provincial, regional, up to the National Super League level.
Are you bringing anything new to the table?
Well, Marvelous, you know, football is football. There is very little that you can say you are bringing that is new, because FIFA does all the thinking, the planning for us. What I can say I'm bringing is innovative ways of ensuring that football is played. As you understand, right now our economy is not in the best of states and corporate support is a challenge for sport. So it's to come up with innovative ways to ensure that girls get to play as many games as possible.
That was